Thanks, David. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's time to reload this week's news, and what a week it was. We got the biggest stories, the winners, the losers, overreported, underreported. Which story sucked you down the rabbit hole, and which story will be remembered in 5, 10, 15, 50, 500 years from this week? We will find out. 312-981-7200 if you'd like to play along tonight. Amar Enyan Studio. Good to see you, Amar. How are you?
I am fantastic.
So, of course, an educator, an activist, a former mayoral candidate here in the city of Chicago. Mario Smith, poet, host at Lumpin' Radio, also... What would you say? Co-producer of the Silver?
Just one of the co-hosts. Okay. I'm helping a little bit more this
Silver
year than
Room
in
Block
the past.
Party.
But yeah, Silver Room Block Party, July 15th in Harper Court is going to be amazing.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah,
and one of the better summer parties of the year.
You can bring your family, which is real cool.
Well, I'm glad that you can bring your family.
Yeah, because you know.
Whatever happened to you, man? There used to be a time when they're like, don't bring your family.
No.
Now Mario's changed. Now he's like, oh, I'm a family guy.
Bring your family. You got to bring your family. You know, it's one of those things. And real quick, the Silver Room Block Party has evolved over the years. This is the 14th one. And I think what makes it great, what makes it really, really great, is that you can bring your kids and not be insulted, not be offended. It's a safe space.
I'm not talking about the Silver Room Block Party. I'm just talking about you.
Ah,
like 15 years ago, we were hanging out. I'd be like, Mario would be like, nah, there ain't no families around here.
No. I still, I'm like Red Fox. I know the difference between television and movies. I know when to curse and when not to.
All right. Good to know. All right. So let's get to it. Amara, why don't we start with you? What do you got for biggest story of the week?
So I had my biggest story of the week was what happened or did not happen in Springfield.
Yeah, right.
This was D-Day. Today was D-Day with regard to the budget. We are at, I think, three years now with no budget.
This will be the third fiscal year without a budget.
Yes, third fiscal year with no budget. Everyone down in Springfield counting down, and still we are, in my opinion, have not made progress. So that was
interesting. And progress is the operative word here, because today, the first time ever, they had a gesture of faith where Republicans voted on an amendment to the spending bill. So they said, we're in on the idea. I mean, essentially, they said, we're in on the idea of a balanced budget.
Right.
It doesn't necessarily mean we're anywhere closer to where we need to be. But they sent a message, maybe it was a message to us, the taxpayers, that they're willing to work together. Does that give you any optimism to what we might see in the next couple weeks?
It didn't really give me much optimism. I mean, it's been 3 years. So that was the sort of thing, gesture that could have been made 2.5 years ago, perhaps. So I just think that we are going to head into the next election cycle with no budget. I just don't.
You really?
I'm not optimistic. Yeah.
Mario, what do you think? What do you think to this story?
How is it that nobody's in jail? How are these people still serving government? Look, 3 years, no budget. People are there. Not people. Let's talk about the hood for a moment. The Illinois State Lottery, which is purported to give money to the education fund for the state of Illinois. Powerball, one of the biggest in the world. And the state of Illinois will not be a part of it effective, what, at 11-something this evening?
Right, right.
How does anybody that votes continue to want to support people who have absolutely no interest in you on a state, local, or federal level?
They would argue, Mario, that, I mean, Democrats would argue, Speaker Madigan would say he's trying to protect you.
No, he's not.
But that's what they're going to argue. Yeah. They're going to say, hey, we're trying to make sure that the reforms that the governor is asking for, they're not going to affect working class people.
But they do. I mean, they do. All the decisions or non-decisions that they have made in Governor Rauner's term have affected everyone in the state of Illinois. Look, he is the most ineffective billionaire ever.
Well, but I kind of challenge that, though. Again, we cannot see this outside of the context of the history of the state of Illinois. Many of the things that should have happened were accumulated over decades. And we had Democratic governors, and we've had a Speaker of the House who's been there for 30-plus years, and a Senate president who's been there for decades. And so these problems did not begin within the 3 years since Rauner became governor. I think he came in with nothing to lose, which is why he has not budged from his agenda. Yeah. So I actually I'm fairly balanced in terms of my criticism, because I think it's easy to make Rauner out to be the boogeyman in all of this. But we cannot forget that a lot of the issues that are plaguing this state happened under several different administrations where we had Democratic majorities.
You know, I will say this. We had David Orr was on the show last night.
A great man.
He had an interesting thing about that really kind of grabbed my attention was this idea of what a politician's supposed to do. And a politician is supposed to manage conflict. That's the number one idea when you deal with politics, about managing conflict. All the people that want something, need something, aren't going to get it, going to get it. I mean, that's the job of a leader, someone who's elected to public office. And when you think of it, he said where it's kind of broken down is you've had patronage on one side, where it became more about getting your friends jobs. And on the other side, billionaires and $1 billion that came into politics that said, we don't need to compromise. I don't need to manage anything. Because I've got all this money, I don't have to worry. I'm not beholden to anybody. Right. I mean, is this an interesting concept of where we are politically? And I mean, it echoes in Washington because it's the same concept there. It's just, mm-hmm. I think there's more checks and balances still. Mm-hmm. But what we're seeing is, I mean, it really is like, it feels like a breakdown in just our political system.
It is. It's gone from one extreme to the other. So on the one hand, you have the machine, which I argue has been very detrimental, not only to politics in general, but to public life. But then on the other, you have an individual who is very independent, who doesn't have to rely on the machine, who's self-funded, who came into office with not having allegiance to anyone, quite frankly.
Doesn't and have to compromise. To
do so anything, he really yeah. doesn't have to compromise. And there was also this tone that people were tired of the status quo. So he benefited from that, both at the state level and nationally. That's the sentiment. And now I would say he didn't lie about what his agenda was when he was running. I mean, he was very clear about what he wanted to do in Springfield, and he hasn't wavered from that one bit. It seems like now people are just realizing that, well, he actually did mean that he was going to carry out this agenda.
You know, I will say, Mario, that to your point about, you know, why aren't voters paying attention to this, or why aren't they in jail? One of the issues that I think is this slow boil. We talk about like the idea of the lobster in the pot, that the things that really grab our attention, government shutdown, not paying workers, where you start to see they have gone to judges and been able to keep those things happening without a budget. So for which that's to me the mind-boggling part, where you're like, the things that there should be some consequences to no budgets, and they found ways to get around those consequences. So Illinois voters, we just kind of go about our day. A lot of people don't see any changes except for people who are working maybe in universities or need social services.
I know a lot of people ask me, as if I have an idea or a clue, they ask me, do you think they'll ever ratify or make amendments to the Illinois Constitution so that this doesn't happen? And I'm like, not as long as these people are basically, you know, there. As long as they're there, they have no reason. Why would you, if you're in power and you're effective, ineffective, why would you try to change anything? It's, again, state, federal, local. All of this is all one big thing, really. More than it's three different things now. It seems that the government, or the way government is run, it is like, well, you know, I'm not going to do this the way we've done it for the last 200 something years, which may or may not have worked.
Right.
But the way you're doing it now doesn't work. And it's like, how do you make a compromise for the people when the people are suffering the most?
312-981-7200. That's Mario Smith, Amara Enya in studio. We're reloading this week's news. Winners and losers coming up next. 312-981-7200. Stay with us. It's a download here on 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman, Mario Smith, Amara Enya in studio, 312-981-7200. We're reloading this week's news. Lots to talk about. Let's get to the winners and losers. I will have on my list for winners, and this also was Mario's pick for biggest story of the week, people who love sugary drinks.
Good luck.
Seems to, I mean, they got today, a judge says, not so fast.
Oh, really?
A temporary stay that says you have, I mean, it's a temporary stay, and the county says they're going to appeal, but it's going to happen one way or the other. But what do you think of the idea of what people are saying? I mean, I don't want to say what people, what Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle and the Cook County administration is saying, that it's a nanny tax. They're the ones that are saying that this is for our health. This is going to help with issues like obesity and other places. They want to treat sugary drinks the way that we treat tobacco, alcohol, and other things.
Who's going to change all the 99-cent, 2-liter signs in the hood? Who does this? Who's been commissioned to change all these signs?
Maybe that's opening up some work, some jobs.
Well, perhaps.
It's a job creator.
Maybe.
I mean, I just wish we would be honest about what this tax is about. This tax is just, it's about revenue.
Mm-hmm.
There's no intrinsic, it's not about health, improving health over time. It has nothing to do with that. And I think that's part of what prompted the lawsuit. So they're saying it's not equally applied. So you can get a Frappuccino with how much sugar and calories in it. And that's not taxed.
Argo tea right here.
Exactly. My tea, it's got all kinds of sugar, but the one in the bottle, that's taxed, right? So the application
and they're
of
doing
the tax,
it by ounces.
Exactly.
It gets really hard. And the pushback has been from markets and other places. They're like, how are we going to, our cash registers aren't set up for this,
right,
which
exactly.
is a little bit of a head scratcher. I'm like, you'd think they would think about that before applying that, because the county just turns around and goes, deal with it, figure it out.
To your point, if they were really concerned about the health of the people of this city and this county, that would not be where you start.
I mean, there's so many other things that they can address. And that's why I think that being disingenuous about this tax only hurt the cause. I think if they had come out and said, look, we don't have any other options for revenue, or we can't come up with other creative ideas to generate revenue, so we're going to tax soda and sugary drinks, that I think would have actually positioned them better. But they're trying to use this notion of the health benefits, and it's kind of insulting because we all know that that's not the impetus for this tax.
Right. I it is interesting, and I we just had Commissioner Bridget Gaynor on in 7:30 talking about sick leave and minimum wage.
Mm-hmm.
Two issues that the county passed into law. They're going to raise the minimum wage, and they're also going to provide five mandatory, or it's not even five, it's up to five. The idea that you would accrue an hour for every 40 hours worked towards a mandatory sick leave policy. Mm-hmm. The asterisk has been that county municipalities can opt out. Half of them have.
Yeah,
they said we don't, and you could say that's political. They don't want to do it, and you could say that's big business is getting in the way. But a lot of the pushback is the totality of everything. The idea that you got a tax on sugar drinks, you got a sales tax that just went through not too long ago. You've got this, that, the other.
It's
municipalities.
It's become so cumbersome for cities, because even in the application of paid sick leave, which I support. But it's in the application and the administrative component to making these things a reality for small business owners, for taxpayers. So it is the totality of it that's coming down hard on these municipalities, on residents. And it's like we're not really thinking about that. We're just saying, oh, well, tax sugary drinks. But the administration of that tax is actually a big deal.
I work at the Promontory.
Yeah.
And not just the Promontory, but I, and it's funny, before I wrote this morning, I thought about it, and I'm like, bars that have fountains with the spray that pour out ginger ale and all that. How much money are we talking about for a bar that they'll have to pay,
let alone
a consumer? How do you regulate this?
I don't know. I haven't paid close enough attention to how they're going to go down the list and do that.
Here's the other thing, though, man. There is so much in this county that we need. I don't think you're going to generate the revenue, and I'm going to say it, and I know I'm going to get in trouble, but I'll say it anyway. I don't think you're going to generate the revenue with this, what you could do. The state of Illinois could have done this a long time ago, and we would not be having these conversations about money or revenue. Legalize.
Yeah.
If you legalize, I'm not even going to say the word, but if you legalize, look at how much money the state of Colorado has made.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, that's a jarring.
Well, there's
number.
A lot that goes into that, and we won't detour into it, but it's a fascinating concept of that being a revenue generator. And you look at Colorado does have its share of other issues that are pertain to that, just the way the culture and everything around it has. You're starting to see more and more businesses that are, it's just essentially corporate weed.
Mm-hmm. Hey,
like that's
happening. Fine by me,
but,
Joe.
But here's what I would say, Mario. It's just, I mean, what if, let's ask the question, what if County Board President Tony Preckwinkle and the Department of Health, and they're not wrong. What if they do think that this is really about the health of the county? Why not put a tax on something? We've done it with cigarettes. We've done it with other things that we consider to be bad for kids. I mean, we all know this. I mean, you can go to a store and buy for $1, 3 liters of really,
not so,
questionable
again,
drink.
Again, those sign changers, who's going to change
but,
all
I mean,
the
there
signs
is something
hood,
to be said
man.
that this has been done in big cities. I think it was Philadelphia.
New York has done it as well. How has that worked out in New York, though?
I believe New York, it got rescinded at some point because it was a Bloomberg thing. I don't remember how it, but Philadelphia, it's been on the books in Philadelphia. But the point being that it is this sort of, I know they call it a nanny tax, mm-hmm. but it is, they are going off of some sort of health study that says, you know, sugary drinks, colas, soft drinks, things like that, this is bad for you.
Right, but so is fried chicken, so is
hey, wait, hold on. Hold on, Amara Enya.
Look,
fried chicken is delicious. Don't you do that.
I mean, fried foods, it could be, it's where do you stop? Where do you draw the line? And I think that's where it runs into trouble. Now, as a person who's very health conscious, yes.
Yes, you are.
Sugary drinks are not the way to go. But
see how she looked at me when I said fried chicken was delicious? Like she's ready to smack me.
No, but I just don't think the taxes are the way to go. And we again, there's sort of this disingenuous argument that's supposed to make the tax more palatable, but I think we just call it for what it is. It's an effort to generate revenue,
mm-hmm, right.
and they have a narrative that they can use to make it more palatable for the public to accept.
Yeah. The other winning in the winners category that we talked to real quick before we go to the break, I mean, I guess we put in the winners category Jimmy Butler.
My man.
And Jimmy Butler, who went from you know, the questions about leadership and locker room. He goes in front of the Minnesota press and he gives out his cell phone number.
777-9311. Call me. I'm Jimmy Butler. I don't care.
But, I mean, you put him in the winner category, Mario, because, yes. I mean, it's good to get out of Chicago.
Man, he is gone. He will not have to bear the burden of having all these people on his back for a team that's never going to win anything. And by never, I mean 2022. Never going to win anything. The best thing that happened to Jimmy Butler was when he got off that plane with that football. He saw his man Thibodeau, and he was like, I love you. And he was like, I love you too, Jimmy.
Now,
and here you go.
Today, just tonight, the Bulls waive Rajon Rondo. So Rajon Rondo's off the team. I mean, this is went from we can win with these aging superstars to Dwayne Wade's the only one left.
And he'll be gone. Now, if they don't buy him out, he'll be gone. I think they'll get rid of him during the trade deadline.
I kind of saw that coming. I was a little confused when they started recruiting all of these end-of-career athletes.
Because
the
they don't know what they're doing.
I thought, you know, they should be building a team, and they started recruiting all of these dim lights, the stars whose lights are dimming,
yeah,
to come and be starters for the Bulls, and now they're all dispersing.
Now, the best stat, and this is our sports guys will tell you, is that either one or two in attendance in the whole league. The United Center, Chicago Bulls.
But that's about to end.
Yeah, maybe. But, I mean, there's something to be said about the fact that this is a Chicago, is a basketball town.
Yeah.
And people love the Bulls.
My good friend Terry Bores, bless his soul. I love Uncle Terry. Terry Bores said famously, people in Chicago are basketball stupid. There's no reason to continue to go to a game at the United Center knowing full well you're going to see any variety of bums at any time trying to play. Here's what you do. If you're a Bulls fan, what you're doing is you're looking at the Milwaukee Bucks, because that right now, outside of Cleveland in that division, they're going to be great.
Yeah.
And they're going to be great for a while. And if you're trying to compete with the Bucks, you got to get past them first. The Cleveland thing is going to end because LeBron's leaving. Kyrie's probably leaving. The Bulls, man, it hurts because I love my team. I got 6 championships, though. I'm straight. It's just like the
White
Sox.
20 years.
I mean, that's fine. I remember all 6 of them, baby. I got one with the White Sox. I'm fine. They don't have to win again. I'm good. I got 7 championships.
There you go.
And I saw the Cubs win, which
Cubs
is,
too.
You know, yeah. Still, yeah.
Mario Smith, Amara Enya in studio. We'll come back. We'll get an update on tonight's news with David Jennings. We'll come back. We'll do losers. Also, overreported, underreported. We're reloading this week's news. Stay with us. Thanks, David. It's a download here on 720 WGN. Justin Coffin, my guest in studio. We're reloading this week's news. Amara Enya, she's an educator and activist, a former mayoral candidate for the city of Chicago. Mario Smith, poet, also a host at Lumpin' Radio.
Yes.
He's also a producer on Silver Room Block Party in Hyde Park coming up in the middle of July.
Gonna be fun.
July 14 or what?
July 15th, 4 days before my 50th birthday.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is that going to, so you should call
We're celebrating it then.
Oh,
I'm not going
to call it Mario's party. You need to put a flyer out. It's like, I'm just a couple of friends together in Hyde Park and Harper Court.
25,000 of my closest friends. That's going to be fun. I can't wait. Starts at noon, July 15th. Please come to Hyde Park. It's going to be fun. Bring
All
your
right.
family.
So let's talk. We're going to talk overreported, underreported, and we still have the loser category. I guess we'll put in the loser category the city of Chicago, and only for the reason we could talk about it tonight. Today it was announced that the Bureau of the ATF is going to bring some resources here. I forgot how many resources, agents for data, for work, pretty much about Chicago violence. In doing so, Donald Trump tweeted out today, Chicago, you know, what's going on in Chicago, it's an epidemic. And then you saw Huckabee Sanders, a spokesperson for the president, today in a, and this was one of those off camera, off, no audio, where she was talking to reporters, and she said that Chicago has a crime problem, because someone asked her what's going on in Chicago, and she said, well, it's a crime problem, which is morality. So it's an immoral. So essentially the way the journalists have pulled it out is that she said that Chicago has a morality issue. And you know, it goes back to this idea of a lot of people talking about this town and its problems, and it does have problems that aren't from here.
Yeah.
You go.
Yeah, no, I mean, everything from the president constantly talking about, tweeting about Chicago, who has no clue about Chicago except for the building that he has here. We were just talking earlier about the interview with DJ Academic and Vic Mensa, and Vic Mensa basically treated DJ Academic on his own show because he is talking about what's happening in Chicago, but he's not here, and he's not doing it from a position of wanting to help. He's just sort of talking about what he doesn't really know about. Exactly.
Right.
And so I think there is some frustration about everyone thinking that they know what to do here, they know what's going on here, when they really don't, but having all of these recommendations about what we should be doing in Chicago.
I guess what gets me frustrated, Mario, especially when the president tweets about it, is that, you know, this has been something that the president and the mayor have worked towards, trying to get more federal involvement to deal with on-the-ground violence in the city of Chicago. And yet it's accompanied with a tweet that says Chicago, it almost puts Chicago down in doing so, as opposed to saying we're working together, this is going to be, there's almost like, in a way, accountability that I'm fixing things, but also zero accountability that we're going to work together to get it done.
I don't believe a word that ever, ever comes out of Donald Trump's mouth, number one. Number two, I think that...
Well, this was a tweet, so...
Well, same thing. Because those tweets are real. That's what the White House said.
Right.
Spicy said those tweets, they're real.
They're real, right.
I don't think it's wise for him to continue to talk about Chicago in that fashion. And I had to talk some people off the ledge today. They're like, the feds are coming. I'm like, yeah, they're coming, but it's a tactical team that's coming. More like a scout team, if you will. Unless Governor Rauner says bring in the National Guard, which he won't, because he does not care about the people in Chicago.
Well, do you think he should bring the National Guard in?
No, absolutely not. Because that doesn't just affect the areas that they want to hit. Those are people in those areas that have absolutely nothing to do with it that are affected by it. No, you do not do that. What you can do, if you pass your budget, what you can do is you can reopen the mental health facilities that were closed by Rahm Emanuel. You can put more money into schools so we can, instead of looking for guns at an abandoned school in Hyde Park or in Woodlawn, like they did the other day, looking for a gun, you'll be looking for bodies in these schools soon. Let's start the process of revisiting where we were before this got this way.
Yeah.
The mental health facilities closings is real. That's a real thing. What Donald Trump doesn't know, because he'll never come here again, is that people in Chicago have a high level of morality and people are very passionate about this city. I know for a fact Amara Anya is. I know for a fact you are. Pete Zimmerman is. There are people here that are very passionate about Chicago. There's a problem in the city, but it's not because we have a morality issue. We have a social issue. It is a societal problem. This is not about anything more than that, really.
Bad character.
No, our character is great. This is Chicago. Our character is fine. It's the people in it have to be given opportunities to be great, and we have taken every single opportunity away from the citizens of the city that are disenfranchised to be great.
Amara, this is, you know, this is every year. 4th of July is the weekend that we look at to be the worst when it comes to violence. Do you expect the same? The city has made strides. The police department has made strides. There was an article this week saying that they applaud the way that the police department is working to stem violence. It's down from last year, not by much, but it's down. Do you see a victory for the city of Chicago, the police department, and the tide against violence?
I'm not really sure that I do. I think that it hasn't been in the headlines as much because of some of the other things that are happening in the city. But what I consider a victory is, I believe it was last year when we had zero shootings. Was it 4th of July?
I think
it was in Inglewood. Yeah. There were zero shootings. I attribute that to the folks in the community also who really stepped up and have been monitoring their blocks and out on their blocks, because that's also important in stemming a lot of the violence in the communities.
And in
several different communities, people who live there who are stepping up and just being proactive about the violence. But I haven't seen articulated from CPD what the real comprehensive strategy is. Whenever there is a shooting, it's, okay, we know who the shooters are. There's 1,400 active shooters. We've got to get guns off the street. I mean, that's pretty much the refrain. But we know that that is not what is going to address the issue of violence. And just like Mario was saying, there are some tangible things that we can do that actually require reallocation of our resources, which would speak to our priorities as a city, that could reduce violence. But we choose not to do that. And I'm very intentional about saying the city chooses not to do that. So now we get exploited, because it is kind of exploitative when you have your president just tossing around Chicago whenever something else he's trying to distract us from. Everyone else is just sort of piling on. It's not because they're interested in really getting to the root cause. It's because it's become a buzzword and a trend.
It's political. I mean, in a way that this is Barack Obama's hometown and the mayor of Chicago is and this is where Hillary Clinton's from. I mean, there's a lot that goes into the idea that Chicago is a Democratic sort of public stronghold, and people know that.
If I could speak quickly on the 4th of July, I'm sorry, there's a button that says cough right here too.
It's okay.
I am a firm believer that this weekend we're going to be okay. I don't know how. I don't have any scientific evidence to make that point outside of I believe firmly that people are finally getting tired. It's exhausting to hear about another kid getting shot. Me and you have been talking about this forever. And you and I as well. It's exhausting. It says so much about the people in this city that are tired of it. We outnumber the people that are doing it.
Right.
I had a teacher when I was at Chicago Vocational, Mr. Williams, shop teacher, used to say, there are more of us than there are of them. Mm-hmm. And I believe that. So this weekend, my hope is, like it is every day, is that we find the better part of ourselves and not get caught up in this, man. Whatever's going on, whatever beef it is, whatever it is, there's a solution to it. There has to be, because every problem has a solution. We just need to get to the bottom of it.
312-981-7200. Let's go to Catherine. Catherine, you and I may share the same sentiment about gangs. Gangs play a big part. What's your take on Chicago violence?
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, and you know, maybe I am wrong. I don't know. Isn't the problem the gangs, the gang members, access to guns, the drugs that kind of feed all of it? But it's the young men who are shooting each other and shooting other people. Isn't that the problem? But nobody ever talks about it.
You're not wrong. People do talk about it. It's not talked about the way it should be. Properly talked about. There's this thing in Chicago, I don't know if you're aware or not, and I don't know where you live, but God bless you. The freight trains, this is an issue in the hood, right?
I know this story.
So the freights have, allegedly, tons of guns on them, and there's no guards guarding the freights, and that's one way that the guns get into the city.
You know, the ATF, the agents, thank you, Catherine, thanks for the call.
Thank you, Catherine.
That's one area that I heard today they're going to be looking into, to secure the freight yards, because that is an issue that's a strange one for society.
Yeah.
Where you're like, so let me get this straight. The trains just stop right where the fence is open,
okay,
and then they get raided by gang members?
Yeah.
What?
And nobody gets cut.
That's bogus.
Here's the other part of that, too, though. When we're talking about young men who are disenfranchised, we're talking about young human beings, young men who are disenfranchised, who do not have jobs, do not have education or proper education, whatever that means these days, or have a ways to be able to fend for themselves, let alone take care of a family. Because in a lot of cases, you have families that are that have been dissected. There's a mom with no dad. There's a dad with no mom. There are young people trying to raise younger people. This is a societal problem. It is a lot easier to say, well, gang members who shoot each other. First of all, there is no more leadership in any of these gangs in Chicago.
Yeah,
these dudes are all going on their own. So when you don't have somebody saying, stop doing that, you've got this problem. I think what we should do instead of, and this is is no offense to Catherine at all, because that's a brilliant phone call, because that's true. We don't talk about it in those terms. I think the simpler solution would be to say, how do we get these guys to realize the value of their lives? How do we get them to realize what living means, as opposed to how easy it is to kill someone? This isn't a G.I. Joe cartoon. These dudes aren't getting up after they get shot. It's over. And I really would like that conversation to turn toward how do we regain the respect for life? That is extremely important.
I think that's well said, because that is mentioned a lot, and we talk about, you know, numbers and violence, and we get desensitized to it. But the idea of it being so easy, where we've seen this over and over and over. I mean,
it's about it is humanizing these people. These are people. And so often when we talk about violence, we talk about numbers, 4,000 shootings, 865 homicides in a year. But when you think about what the solution should be, we have to remember that we're dealing with human beings.
Young human beings.
Young human beings. 15,
14 years old.
So yeah, kids. Kids. And so the question then becomes, at what point in our policies and in society were there breakdowns? Because there were many. So there were definitely breakdowns in the home, but there were also breakdowns in housing policy. There were breakdowns in economic policy.
Education.
There were breakdowns in public health policy with exposure to public health hazards that do have an impact on you from childhood through adulthood, that could manifest in violent ways. So when we talk about violence, we always see it as this thing, but it's not a thing. It's a symptom of many breakdowns in policy and in society that have not been addressed. And these are human beings that we're dealing with. So the way to address it is not to say, okay, we need, you know, 20,000 more police on the street, or we need, you know, more tasers instead. That's not the solution. The solution is to look at where the breakdowns occurred and then to make the changes.
I read somewhere in a fascinating idea that, you know, a lot of the gangbangers who might be in certain areas, they don't necessarily live in that neighborhood.
No.
They don't live on that block. They're not protecting their block. They're not even protecting their own drug trade. They're going to get somebody else or doing what have you. But that, you know, because if that was happening, and I'll just say it, in affluent neighborhoods and white neighborhoods in Chicago, if a kid could pop up and shoot someone and take off, it wouldn't be accepted. I mean, you see that. I mean, there's one shooting at the Ohio underpass and they want to close and change. But the idea that I don't think that's said enough, that a lot of the gangbangers, they don't live where they're doing this. And it usually happens in areas that they can get away with it.
Right.
And they get away with it because it's in an area that's under-resourced, underdeveloped. And then at the end of the day, you know, that that just doesn't have a voice when it comes to saying we need to be protected as well.
It's kind of like the heroin thing. Heroin was a problem in the hood for a long time. And until the white kids started ODing on heroin, it was like, oh, God, we've got to do something
about
the heroin
epidemic. Right.
It's an epidemic.
No, it's
a pandemic. This is a pandemic. We live in a city that is under the auspices of a pandemic because people are killing people and nobody can seem to be able to stop it. And until you figure out the simplest part of this, again, the respect for life. What does your life mean to you? If it doesn't mean anything to you, then we need to find out why you feel that way and work that problem out so you can go to the next man and be like, brother, I'm done. I am not trying to kill you. But right now you got kids rolling up on grown people in Hyde Park on 53rd Street with paintballs and eggs. And that's just on a weekend in Hyde Park. In Hyde Park.
Mario Smith, Amara Anya in studio. We're reloading this week's news, 312-981-7200. We'll come back. We'll do overreported. We'll underreported. What story sucked us down the rabbit hole? And which story will be remembered in 5, 10, 15, 500 years from this week? Stay with us. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. Lots of texts and calls coming in about violence. We'll stick with violence, you know, as it is the 4th of July weekend, and this is usually the worst weekend for violence in the city of Chicago. Mario Smith, Amara Enya in studio. We'll pick up overreported, underreported coming up after David's news at 9. But 773 says, all right, they should focus on the entertainment industry that glorify, all caps, gangbanging, drug dealing, doing nothing for yourself, because that's cool, it's ridiculous, and I'm sorry, I have no empathy or sympathy for the young kid that knows right from wrong and still does it because all the wrong choices perpetually, blah, blah, blah. I live in the West Side, and I shake my head everywhere I look because, wow, do they wake up early every day to stand there and do absolutely nothing. to better themselves.
I can identify as someone who lives on the west side. I can definitely identify with that.
Well, thanks for helping, friend.
It is true. But again, it's endemic to many breakdowns that have taken place because they will wake up early to sell loose squares at 6 a.m.
Yeah.
But those same individuals, if I had a job to offer them, won't have the requisite skills
to
be able
job.
To take that job or persist in that job. That's several breakdowns that have occurred.
That's true.
And I see it.
I'm sorry to say you're helping, friend.
No, but I mean, that's sort of been the criticism of the mayor's plan for the one summer, one Chicago job push. Which is, a noble idea to try and get the private sector to give money to have them open up doors for internships and jobs. But there has been a little bit of pushback saying, are these kids that are getting up at 6 a.m. to sell loose squares and on the west side, are they really going to go to the local park district and sign up for a job?
No.
At a certain point, where does the city and what they want to offer for resources end, and where does that personal responsibility sort of begin?
I'll say this to the texter. You got to have a little bit of empathy. You got to find it in your heart to have a little bit of empathy because this is a problem.
Yeah, walk a mile.
You know what I'm saying? And I dig where he's coming from. I really do. I do understand what he means, and it's frustrating and it's very, very aggravating. But, to say that you have no empathy for another human being because they are on the lower end of this pole we're on, I don't.
And also because many of them are young, our children are, those 15, 16, 17 year olds to maybe 24 years old. That's a large number of the individuals who are caught up in that. And so I have empathy because if you're a 12 year old, you're basically a product of your environment. And there are many things that are outside of their control that they end up responding and reacting to, which to me makes it even more important because even on the jobs piece, I think it is a good thing to have these jobs because getting the culture of work has been a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
I think our biggest issue is that we have to start so young now because by the time that individual is 17 years old, they have almost no skills to make them even able to have a minimum wage basic entry level
job. And we talk about
job.
Gubernatorial candidate J.B. Pritzker, to his credit, that's one of his big platforms, early education, the idea of getting at students at 4 years old, three, mm-hmm. Saying, hey, we need to start with programs way earlier mm-hmm. than we are because we're seeing such a we had a guest on this week that said that the number of low income students that go into college and the number that graduate, there's I think it was 80% dropout.
That's a lot of people.
That's a lot to think about when you think, it was hundreds of thousands. I forgot the number that she had quoted, but it was startling to go, that seems a disproportionate number to society. And that's something to think about.
Let's not paint this gangbanging thing with a broad brush, broad strokes. This is not Boys in the Hood. This is not, this isn't that. This is a complex problem. It's multi-layered. These kids are actually very smart. They're smart enough to know they know capitalism because they know how to sell and make money from it. They know firearm training, maybe not the best firearm training ever, but you know what I'm saying? These aren't just walking around blind and dumb. These kids have a little brain in them. We have to cultivate the good parts of these young people, and we're not doing a good job of doing that.
There's some great texts here. 847 makes a good point saying, people incorrectly or erroneously say that there's something inherent in young black men that make them violent. Mm-hmm. The attitude is centuries old, and it's wrong.
You.
People who are involved in Chicago shootings or gun violence were not born wanting to do that and not wake up every day thinking, I hope I can get involved in violence or shootings. It's so unfair to expect people in economically deprived neighborhoods who don't have hope or role models or opportunities to just will themselves up and out of bad circumstances.
Exactly. And that is my argument. First of all, there's this notion that there's an inherent or intrinsic violence that's attributed to either your color, if you're black, or if you live on the west side or the south side.
Or if you're Latino, too.
And that's actually, if you're Latino. And that's actually not the case. So I spend a lot of my time crafting a different narrative because once it's cemented in people's mind that violence and blackness are synonymous, or violence in the west side or violence in the south side are synonymous, then all of our policies flow in that direction. And so we don't see investment because the notion is, well, those are those violent people anyway. They don't deserve this development or they don't deserve these jobs or this kind of housing.
So we should take away resources, mental health,
exactly.
Whatever it might be.
Cut the public health programs, all of that, because those are those violent people anyway.
As my friend Chuck Perkins famously said years ago, the pathology of the auction block festers. It does. until we're ready to have that conversation. Yeah. There's a lot going on, but the pathology of the auction block festers.
Good quote to throw out right at the time we got to take a break.
To give it to Dave Jennings, because that's what I do.
Mario Smith, Amara Enya in studio. We're reloading this week's news. All right, we'll come back. We'll do overreported, underreported. We got to talk about Trump tweets.
Oh.
We also got to talk about, I mean,
do we have to?
We do. That's the overreported. We're reloading Amara Enya, Mario Smith in studio. Stay with us. It's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, 312-981-7200. Getting a lot of great texts tonight about violence, violence prevention, violence causes. Amara Enya, Mario Smith in studio. But we're moving on. We've got to move on to the...
Shout out to David Jennings. I'm sorry I had to say it.
Good job. You got a new fan, David.
Thank you.
I'm all in. You and the Velvet Fog, Rob Martier, need to do an album together.
Oh, man.
Heck
if,
yeah.
If only I could sing.
No, you ain't got to sing. Just read. You and Rob just read stories to music. It would be great.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to tweet him later and tell him.
Okay, cool. I can go for that.
That would be awesome.
I have lots of time in my schedule, unfortunately.
All right, let's get to overreported stories. Trump tweets, Trump. And, you know, we haven't gotten to a point yet where we've talked about it. I an amazing barrage of non-specific, or it's very specific, but non-agenda, non-policy, non-White House, non-presidential tweets at cable news hosts this week.
You want to know something sad? I have a number of people who are varied in their political views that are Twitter friends or Facebook friends, and it seems that they seem to be with every tweet of his. Mm-hmm. They seem to believe everything he says as mm-hmm. if it is God's truth, mm-hmm. and that is scary because it sets. I don't want to think that he's really that conniving, but yeah. You get the funny feeling that all of the tweeting and that stuff and challenging the media is a specific plan for something else he has down the road. And I have a funny feeling that when it really gets sprung, no one is going to be very happy with what it is.
Yeah, let's bring the panel in on this because, I mean, you really do get the feeling. You know, people say, Stephen Colbert mentioned this week, stop calling it a new low.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah. I mean, this is consistent. I mean, we saw in the campaign, you know, and otherwise that he's going to go to these different places, especially when it comes to women. I don't know what's going on there. But I mean, it is overreported in the way that I think people are wanting some sort of fallout or consequence, and it just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And therefore, the media gets it in its own cycle, and it's just over and over and over on Trump tweets.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's part of what happens, I think, is it normalizes it. Even just saying a new low, but the way that it's been reported and, quite frankly, his behavior, that I think the media has in part normalized it. We entertain it. We don't. We legitimize it by the constant coverage of it, by the fact that they're still scrolling through his tweets for their news stories for the day, right? So I think there's some complicity in the media in terms of overreporting these Trump's tweets and normalizing this behavior. Yeah. So even when I heard the latest tweets that he did with regard to Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski, to me, I was just like, okay,
Next,
right. I wasn't really surprised. And I think that's actually dangerous because he's been consistent
well,
in his behavior.
Well, a friend of mine, Mario, she mentioned to me today, she said, okay, well, we're talking about it. I mean, here it is. Donald Trump is. I think that David might hit on something where maybe there's nothing in the news. He wants to make news. He's able to manufacture stories that are, the conspiracy theorists among us will say distractions to real stories that are important. Or he just likes to be on the front. He likes to mess around and be on the front page of stuff. And we oblige. We give it to him.
First of all, I don't know many 73-year-old people that like Twitter like that. Number two, I think it's disingenuous for us to ignore the fact that he continues to disrespect women at such an alarming rate. I remember, oh boy, seems so long ago, but it really wasn't, right before the campaign or before the election, like a day or two before the election, when the tape from Access Hollywood came out.
Yeah, right.
He's never, ever, ever been on the side of women. And the most amazing and glaring part of this, aside from the tweets, is that a whole country of white women voted for him.
Well, let me ask you this, because I'll peel back and I'll play devil's advocate to what the White House is saying.
This is unusual
Yeah, right. The White House is saying that, you know what, you should see the things that this show, this specific cable show, mm-hmm. says about the president. It's way beyond the pale. These are things that you should not be saying. I mean, what Mika says over and over is, you know, this guy, he's mentally ill. He mm-hmm. says things that it's not news and it's not something that it's not treating the president with respect. So therefore, he fights back. And that seems to resonate with his voters' base. Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems to be this idea that if you're going to treat him in this kind of way, he has the ability to respond. And in a certain way, Amara, that's kind of what he got voted in for, right?
Well, I think his type of response is attractive to a certain type of supporter that would support a Donald Trump. But again, these are adults, and you are the president of the United States. And there is a certain respect that is accorded to and should be demanded right. of that office, regardless of the treatment that you receive. That's part of the package when you decide that you want to run for president, that you will be handled by comedians in a certain way, that the people who did not support you will talk about you or engage you in a certain way. So it comes with the package of being president. Now, to me, it's just absurd, this notion that you are entitled to fighting back. You're really just degrading not only yourself, but you're degrading the office of president. And so once you stoop down to that level, it makes everything fair game for whomever is in that seat.
You know, I mentioned I think it was a carryout yesterday where his spokespeople will say, oh, he's treated unfairly, the most unfairly, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, go see what Oprah Winfrey's Twitter's like.
Yeah.
Go see what
My Twitter
Jay
is like.
Jay Cutler's
sometimes.
Twitter is like. Yeah. Go see what Hillary Clinton's Twitter is like. I mean, the idea that somehow he gets it worse than some of the biggest people who are the most successful and well-liked people in American history. I'm not saying Jay Cutler, but I'm saying like, I think Oprah Winfrey, where, yeah. I mean, even the higher you get up to the point, you're going to be the president, you're going, the numbers that are going to swell to get your attention negatively are going to go up.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is.
If that's the way it is.
Donald Trump has always been Donald Trump. This is not new. He has a soft stomach when it comes to people criticizing him. When the Apprentice got canceled, he got upset about that because his platform was gone for the most part.
You're right. He took it personally.
Right. He takes all of these things personally and then turns them into these 140 letter tweets. It's like, dude, you're the president of the United States. And for whatever that means for people, he's the president of the United States. Act accordingly. But you can't act accordingly because you don't know what you're doing. The tale of it all, when he had to sit with Barack Obama and they were in the photo op thing, whatever room that is. And he had that look on his face like, oh my God, this is real.
this is not fun.
I don't want to do this.
Well, you know what he had? He had the look of a Twitter troll who meets someone in person.
Right,
I hate to say it, but that's what that look was. I don't say the same things when I'm in person.
Yeah. Right? You're not hiding behind a computer. Yeah. You're actually Barack Obama.
The other part I had for overreported, even though it was so strange, such a surreal story, was when the Cubs went to the White House this week. You forget about that. I mean, a strange moment where Trump treated them like a 12-year-old, like the Little League team.
Would you guys like to see the Oval Office?
Would you like to see the Oval Office? Yeah. That guy right there, he's a real powerful senator. And they said that to the professor, I made the joke as well. Like, is this a team that they just sell the most candy bars to come to the White House? Right.
They sold the most world's finest candy to get to the White House.
All right, 312-981-7200. Let's do this. Let's take a break so we stay on time. We'll come back. We'll do rabbit hole stories and which story is going to be remembered.
I got a good one, Justin.
500 years from now. Stay with us. It's a download or reload in this week's news. Amara Anya, Mario Smith in studio, 312-981-7200. We got a lot of great texts tonight. I feel like I had an extra hour, I'd read everyone. There's really thoughtful stuff coming in. I appreciate everybody who called in text tonight. We appreciate it. Okay, let's get in the rabbit hole stories. And I kind of want to go with yours, Mario, because it's light and it's fun. And it's one that actually I found myself getting sucked down the rabbit hole as well.
Mm-hmm.
And the Atlanta-based rap group Migos.
Migos, my boys!
Does Bad and Bougie and is a pop. I mean, they're up at the charts.
Yeah,
they had a tough award show at the BET Awards, but they seem to be fighting with everybody, namely the BET announcer or the interviewers. There's an interview that went viral. I saw it. It was so fascinating to watch.
Yeah.
The beginnings of an awards fight.
Yeah.
That's really what it was, right?
Yeah. Three guys dressed up like they're in Starsky and Hutch with these tight silk shirts on.
Doing the worst interview in the
world. The worst interview ever. Ready to fight a B-list hip-hop dude. It was great. I don't know what everybody was so upset.
Set it up. So Migos is a popular group that was at the BET Music Awards.
First of all, if you are listening to this and you don't know who the Migos are, you should ask your children because they do. And they listen to the stuff all the time. Migos are extremely, unbelievably, unreasonably popular in music. They were sitting at the post-award show interview. And shout out to New Edition who killed it. Post-award show interview. And somehow the conversation took a turn where they just kind of like got real dejected and dropped their heads down. And Joe Budden was like, why are you guys even here? And he took the mic and kind of flipped it and walked away. Said something as he was walking away. And then that's when the Migos became the superheroes
they stood up.
And they stood up and rolled up their silk shirts and unbuttoned them and was like, well, let's go, Joe Budden. What's up, son?
It was funny to watch because the camera was stationary in a two shot.
Yes.
And so they kind of walked into the camera and you really did see the anatomy of the beginning of an awards fight. We hear always, oh, there's a fight in an award show. You got to see these three guys who were like walking slowly towards the announcer.
But that's not even
people
the best part,
in the way
though.
Of it.
It's the people behind it that are like sticking their head and like, oh, they're about to fight.
It started off like almost like they were standing and then people got in the way and it just turned into a melee without it being a melee.
There is nothing better than a BET award show something.
Why does that happen? Because Chris Brown got in a fight with Migos as well.
Oh, Chris Brown. Part of that night was Chris Brown. Chris Brown challenged all three of the Migos, like, come at me. I'm Chris Brown.
I just thought it was interesting because they had tops on that looked like mine. I mean, they're wearing these flowery blouses.
That's what they wear. That's what they wore, the flowery silk shirts.
And so then they're posting up to fight Joe Budden. I'm like, what's going on here? And I didn't watch the BET Awards.
Me neither, but that was great.
But I started to hear about it, and that's how I kind of got sucked into it as well. And I see them, they looked so down and so dejected, and they had these tight shirts
on. Really
flowers.
I'm going to start watching the BET Awards more. If you're guaranteeing me the Migos are going to put them up against everybody in music,
I guess takeaway on it was it was very interesting to watch, like I said, the beginnings of a brawl.
And you know who they wouldn't fight? Bobby Brown, because Bobby Brown fries chicken with cocaine. He would kill them. He'd kill the Migos by himself. It's in his book. It's in his book. I didn't make that up.
But, I mean, I guess for me, it was amazing to me watching this and then also hearing about the Chris Brown stuff that, you know, all eyes on it. It becomes almost like these award shows, it becomes important for these guys to fisticuff, to get into some sort of pushing match. What is it about that? I mean, these Migos is not known as a thug group.
They're not thugs at all. But
so
here's
why do they have to, here's
the
why
thing.
Do they have to do that?
I think because when you weigh like maybe 108 without the jewelry and stuff on, you got to kind of be like, hey, man, just because I'm in the Migos doesn't mean you're going to push me around. But let's be real. The best part about all of this is that we're actually having a conversation on WGN about the Migos.
Yeah, right.
That's a win.
I like you call them the Migos.
Oh, they are the. Let me tell you.
Very 49 of you.
if Migos walk down this street right now, everybody out here would be like, bad and bougie, bad. They'd be singing because it's the Migos.
Yeah.
It's the Migos.
I will say, I was not familiar with them until the award show.
Get to know
maybe
music.
I had vaguely heard of them before, but I was not aware of the Migos.
Get to know music that's kind of bad. But hey, Jay-Z's new album. You know what? We didn't talk about Jay-Z's the winner, and I'll tell you why. I walked out my house at 10-something this morning, and five different cars were playing a new Jay-Z album that just came out today. That
on Tidal, right?
He's the winner.
I've seen so many posts on social media saying Tidal's still around. That's still a thing, but he released the album on Tidal, right?
Here's how he's the winner. His wife made a song called Lemonade about him being unfaithful on that was released on Tidal, which he owns. They both made money off of that. He comes back with his album on Tidal and has a song about how he was unfaithful to his wife and how he apologized to her on Tidal. Money. Those two are winners. The Migos, though, are the real winners.
All right, so here we go. Which story is going to be remembered from this week in 5, 10, 15, 20, 50, 500 years from now? When we're all looking back at the history books that we find in our time capsules, what story from this week will be in there? Let's start with you, Amara. What do you think?
I don't know. This one was hard for me because I'm inclined to do one of the Trump tweets because it's been so overreported. But I actually think that the state of Illinois and the budget situation, I mean, we had Representative Redonio, who resigned or retired, I guess, because of it, largely because of the lack of progress. The fact that you can go 3 years without a budget, has that ever happened in any state in this country?
This is
a big deal that I think maybe we're not feeling the impact now because we're in it. But in 5, 10, 50, 500 years, I think they're going to be saying, what were they thinking? 3 years with no budget. You know, what's going on in Illinois?
That's a great one. Mario, what do you got for a story to be remembered?
It's Trump, man, and those stupid tweets. It's like, look, you were very successful this week, actually. You got the Supreme Court to agree to a partial ban on flights.
Yeah, that's right.
You should have been talking about that. You met with the Cubs and flipped out and started doing other stuff. I don't know what group of animals they've got in Washington, D.C. that help him dissect. Like, is there a bird that points at something or a fish that floats towards something
about this. Someone just says, look at the puppy.
Yeah. Right. When you start getting like graphic about a person bleeding from the face, that wasn't true, and things like
what are you doing? Yeah,
yeah. What is that?
Well, you know, you're absolutely right. You nailed it. I think that the media, and I, for all intents and purposes, the media was supporting the idea that the Supreme Court gave a victory to Donald Trump on the travel ban and the partial. You know, that was something that we saw. It's implemented now. There's no more chaos at the airports. It's a serious topic. But at the same time, I mean, that's a victory for the Trump administration. Healthcare, you can say what you will about delaying the vote. This is where my story that's going to be remembered is that a lot of people will say it's a victory for people who are against a new healthcare panel, the healthcare bill that was coming out of the Senate. I don't think so, because delaying the vote just means more time for the conservative end of the Republican Party, Ted Cruz, namely, to be able to roll back more things that they didn't like, that they want to defederalize healthcare. So that's not a victory for Democrats that was delayed. It probably would have been smart to go for the vote at that point.
Right.
The other thing that was brought out today, which I thought was really, really interesting about this issue about healthcare, is they said if they cannot get this together, if they cannot get the votes that they need, which is two, I think it's only two people have to defect for them to not have the majority for that vote, they're going to go ahead and just go for a repeal, and they will replace later.
They're not. Yeah. McConnell tonight in Kentucky said they're not going to take Trump's advice.
Watch out
on that. Sticking to this.
But and watch out.
I'll give you one, all right?
What do you got?
The longer this drags out, I think it makes a much stronger case to go with a single-payer system.
Yeah, but the single-payer system is not a Republican favorite.
It may not be a Republican favorite, but the Republicans got a very interesting surprise when they went home the last time.
Yeah.
They suddenly discovered that their people, while they didn't like Obamacare, had discovered, hey, this is not bad. It's something. And you guys are talking about taking me and leaving me with nothing.
I think there's something to be said about that.
They don't like that.
But I would also argue that they would probably go for, I feel like they would take Trump's advice and repeal an Obamacare before they would go to a single payer system. But my point being that you are going to see they're going to see some changes in healthcare, but this week will be remembered as the week that started to
happen. I tell you what, America, you better eat your vegetables, drink more water, do some jumping jacks, get your cardiovascular system together.
And eat apples.
You better. Green apples, because if not, you're going to be gone.
Mario Smith is a poet.
Get it right.
He's also a host on Lumpin' Radio, and he's a producer with the Silver Room Block Party in Hyde Park coming up on July 15th.
It's going to be great, man. Great, Pete Rock is spinning. Tall Black Guy is going to be there. Georgia Ann Muldrew and some other. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be amazing.
Looking
Please come out.
It.
It's at noon. And it's my birthday party, so everybody's got to come.
Amara Enya, educator, activist, a former mayoral candidate. You guys are great. We'll have you back soon. Thanks for reloading this week's news. That was a fun reload. I always love an Amara and Mario in. The Texters as well. I mean, some great stuff. Really thoughtful, pushing back at a lot of things that have said, but also at the same time agreeing with things. That was really nice. Moving on, though. We have to move on. The news, of course, is a really big deal, of course, all the stories this week, but probably a bigger deal, what happened on The Bachelorette on Monday night. As you know, if you've been listening to the show on Friday nights, we do a segment called Reality Check. Tracy Swartz, the Inc. columnist at the Chicago Tribune, joins us to talk about the Chicago storylines on reality television. Of course, The Bachelorette, the prime reality show that's happening right now. And, you know, one of the stories that's been playing out is Chicago's representation. We had four, Pete. I mean, as you are the, you watch the show. You are the resident, a viewer of The Bachelorette for the download.
And that includes like two episodes. I watch vicariously through my wife, or she watches through me, or, you know, something like that.
But
she
watches. But there were four guys. One of them got bounced on the first day. And then next one bounced, and then there were two left, and that's kind of where we're at. Tracy Swartz joins us now. Tracy, did I accurately portray that? Was that anywhere near? Did I get it right?
You boiled like 12 hours of television I've watched down into 2 minutes. So, yeah, I think you've got it about right.
Well, The Bachelorette, of course, and when we kicked off the season, I mean, this was such a big deal for Chicago. You wrote about, others wrote about, that there were a pretty intense Chicago representation for this year, four or five guys that were from the area.
Yeah, four guys. She started with 31, four of them from the Chicago area. So there were high hopes for Chicago. There was the four guys who actually live in Chicago. Plus, there was the guy, Peter, your favorite, who is from Wisconsin, but he was named hottest trainer of 2012 by Time Out Chicago. It's like four and a half from Chicago.
Yeah.
So,
you know, I'm a hot trainer kind of guy. You know that about me. I like the hot trainers.
So we had two episodes this week, because there's not going to be an episode next week because of the holiday. So, unfortunately, one of our guys got out each of the episodes. On Monday, Iggy, your favorite Iggy, was unceremoniously cut. And then on Tuesday's episode, which actually ran Wednesday morning, it aired Wednesday morning in Chicago because of the Cubs game, 1 o'clock in the morning it aired on Wednesday, Anthony was cut. Former Northwestern football player.
Oh, no. So wait.
He was on that horseback riding game with her.
Which one last week you told us that there was the snitch in the house that was from Chicago, and was that Iggy?
That was Iggy. So Iggy basically snitched on the house and snitched on other people in the house. And then, sure enough, on Monday's episode, he was cut, and he cried when he was cut. He was very upset and said he shouldn't have spent time snitching on the other people, but it was too late.
He learned his lesson.
And now I finally can tell you, he and Diggy were spotted filming Bachelor in Paradise.
So they're both at Bachelor in Paradise.
Yes. There was a photo TMZ posted this week showing Iggy and Diggy hanging out. It looked a little bit of a hot tub-ish situation.
Sure,
so Iggy, of course, spoiled this weeks ago. He was in Mexico during that first iteration. For those who don't remember, Bachelor in Paradise is a show where the Bachelor and Bachelorette contestants from previous seasons sort of pair up in Mexico. And this season they started filming, and then there was some allegations of some misconduct. It got the production was halted. They did an investigation. Warner Brothers did an investigation of Warner Brothers and found that Warner Brothers did okay. So they resumed filming. And so anyway, Iggy posted a picture of himself on Instagram weeks ago showing him at the airport with Diggy and a guy who was on a previous season of The Bachelorette. But it was a big deal because he had not yet been kicked off of The Bachelorette.
So he spoiled himself.
He spoiled himself. I was able to confirm that, yes, he was in Mexico during that ill-fated taping. And then, of course, that new photo showed him and Diggy over there. So that show was originally supposed to air in August. I'm not sure now with production stopping, they haven't, you know, announced it. But usually you get a couple dozen former contestants on there, and we'll see, I guess, if Iggy and Diggy end up finding love, because they didn't find it with Rachel.
So the four Chicagoans are gone. So that right. that's it. That's the so that's it. That is the half Chicagoan still around, or is he gone too?
No, Peter is still around, and Peter right. is one of her favorites. This is the guy that Jimmy Kimmel predicted would win the whole thing. They both they seem to really get along. They both have gaps in their front teeth, so mm-hmm. they're pretty compatible just from that alone.
Okay, good to know. All right, so at least our guy is still in the running, has an opportunity. So how many people are left on the show? How many episodes are left? They're not going to be on this next week. But you said that Bachelor in Paradise starts in or will air in August, so I'm assuming there's only a month left of Bachelorette.
She only has six contestants left. So they Tuesday's episode, like I said, that ran aired Wednesday in Chicago, she cut six people. So she got rid of basically half of the guys, and so she's down to six. But now you start to slow things down. You have to go to hometown. You have to visit their hometowns, meet their family. They meet your family. So I don't think that she has many weeks left, maybe like 4 weeks left. But I also don't know, because the production stoppage on Bachelor in Paradise, if that will still air on August 8th, okay. like it was supposed to before. Right, they have right, not right. announced it yet. Basically, I mean, I'm getting in touch with ABC on this matter is just very difficult.
Tracy Swartz, the ink columnist of Chicago Tribune, joins us every Friday in our segment called Reality Check, where we get updated on the Chicago storylines in reality television. Yeah, so I guess I guess we can all cheer for our half Chicagoan. That's all that's left on The Bachelorette. Is there any other reason to watch? And the second part of that question, what do you keep saying that it didn't air till 1 o'clock in the morning? I mean, does that really tick off Chicago audiences? Because this is a big show that has a lot of following. Like, do you hear from people that are like, that's just unacceptable?
Oh, yeah. So it was not initially on the schedule that an episode was going to air Tuesday. But I think because the calendar, and maybe they're maybe trying to move things around because of Bachelor in Paradise. So they decided it was going to air on Tuesday. But the ABC station in Chicago, it was already planning to air the Cubs national game. So they decided that the first run for the Bachelorette in Chicago would be 1:07 to 3:07 Wednesday morning.
Wow.
So your girl here, just to, you know, for you and the readers, stayed up till 1 o'clock in the morning to watch Anthony get kicked off.
Wow.
Yeah, see, this caused a lot of problem at my house, too, because my wife listens to about 12 Bachelorette podcasts on Wednesday morning, and she was right. mad that she, you know, her Wednesday was ruined because she couldn't listen to 12 podcasts.
You would think that the Bachelorette franchise is one of the hottest thing that ABC has, right?
Oh, yeah. There are people upset. Yeah.
Yeah. The idea that would happen. I mean, I guess there's nothing you can do if you have a Cubs game schedule. There's not much you can do. You can't put like an ABC 7.2 yeah. HD channel. They couldn't do that.
No. And there are people like cursing, and the Cubs didn't even win. So it wasn't even, you know, a good Cubs game. There were people very upset. Chris Harrison, the host of The Bachelor and The Bachelorette, even weighed in and said, you know, we're sorry. Good luck to the Cubbies. Even better luck to Rachel. We're very sorry, Chicago, that you're not going to get to see it with the rest of us.
Wow, we're getting there. We're getting national attention for terrible programming choices. All right, so, you know, that wraps up The Bachelorette. I mean, we'll continue to talk with you about whether or not our half Chicagoan gets it. What's his name again?
Peter.
Got to remember that, Peter. All right, so Peter is still in the running. So when the question becomes, when you go back to his hometown, it's not going to be Chicago. Is it going to be like somewhere in Wisconsin?
Yeah, he's from, I think, the Madison area. But I also think he was spending some time out in L.A. But I do believe that she does travel with him to Wisconsin. There were some photos that were released of the two of them together.
All right. Okay, so before I let you go, you know, we've been paying attention to some other reality shows that are on. Spouse House. classic name. I love that name.
Can you say that without laughing? No, you can't.
I can't. It's such a dumb name, Spouse House. There's a spouse in the house. So where are we at with the other reality shows and their connection to Chicago?
Sure. So Married at First Sight, which is filmed in Chicago this season, is the six singles that paired up from the Chicago area. We're about halfway through. So they've been married for about a month, and they have about a month left. to decide if they want to stay married or get divorced. And Justin, can I tell you, you know how much reality TV I watch. This is why I'm on this show. I have never seen a sillier argument than the one that aired on this Thursday's episode of Married at First Sight. Can you believe this? That this couple, so basically this episode was all about the 1 month anniversary, and each couple celebrated in a different way. One couple went out to Galena, went to like a B&B. Another couple who live in Barrington, they dined at home and then sort of walked along the Riverwalk. The Chicago couple, the one who lives like downtown area, they also went to the Riverwalk. They went to the Island Party Hut where you can, you know, play bags and cornhole. They got into the biggest fight over cornhole. I have never seen this. In fact, I was watching this episode at home, and my husband turned to me, he's like, is that an actual thing, like an argument over cornhole?
They're arguing like over the, like rules and like who won and lost and that kind of stuff?
No. The wife in the relationship is very like skittish about stuff. She doesn't want to do anything. She doesn't want to step out of her comfort zone. She had not played cornhole in what she said was many years, and she didn't want to embarrass herself on TV or in front of her husband. And so she was like trying to downplay it, like, man, I haven't played in so many years. And, you know, she's playing and she's not very good, but whatever, it's cornhole, who cares? And she's getting very upset. He has to sit her down, say, it's okay, it's just bags. This is who I am. I like to play bags. Like, you're not going to change me. So there they are on the Riverwalk.
Oh, no.
And she's getting so upset because she is not good at cornhole. And he's like, this is what it takes to be part of my family. Is like, I imagine us playing bags for years to come. So you need to get with the program.
Wow. Tracy, that's...
Yes. Classic Chicago argument.
Yeah. Babe, I love bags. If you want to get with us, you're going to have to love bags too. Something like that, and I'd pretty much nail it. Let's do it. I'm going
to
do a real
pretty
quick.
Pretty much, but she has to be more teary in your reenactments. Okay. He has to be more emphatic. Like, I do crazy things sometimes. I play bags. Like, you better, this is who I am. You're not going to change me.
Here's the reenactment. I just, you knew I wasn't good at bags. And then he'd be like, babe, this is who I am. All right? I love nachos. I love jalapeno poppers. And I love bags. If you don't love bags, then you know what? Maybe we shouldn't be married at first sight. And then you hit the music and it swells and they go to commercial. Right?
That's pretty much it. I mean, can you imagine a more quintessential argument after spending your 1 month wedding anniversary that you had with a stranger by going to Harry Carey's on Navy Pier? No.
All right. So Married at First Sight. That sounds like a winner. When does that air? That's Thursday nights on, what you told me this was TLC?
The Lifetime Network.
Oh, Lifeline.
The Lifetime Network.
Lifetime.
Come on, it's your favorite. It's your favorite network.
It is my favorite network. And then what is anything on Spouse House is, again, I can't say it without laughing. That's the other one that's shot in Chicago or has Chicago people, right?
No, it's even worse. It's 14 Chicago people who are supposed to pair up and get married, but they didn't film it in Chicago. They brought them out to L.A. because you can't find love in Chicago. They got to, you know.
Do they act like it's
west.
In Chicago? Like they show externals and then they're back in like a house that's in L.A. or no?
They haven't actually released the screener yet, so it hasn't aired. It airs July 9th. And that's on the TLC. That's the Learning Channel, Justin, the Learning Channel Network. That one airs, next month. Other than that, I mean, we've had some horrible runs with reality TV. We just had a guy kicked off Big Brother after only being on the show for 12 hours. He's a microbiologist, a suburban microbiologist, and he tried to do this weird striptease to kind of stay on the show, couldn't make it. We had two guys from Lake County who were dropped in the wilderness for a show called Alone, who they also had to tap out because they couldn't last but a day. So we've kind of had a bad month for
I love it.
Reality stars from Chicago.
I love it. Tracy, this is must listen to radio for you to explain where everyone's at from Chicago, the people from our area that are losing in reality television. I love it. Tracy Swartz is the Ink columnist for Chicago Tribune. She joins us every Friday night for our segment Reality Check. Tracy, till next week, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.